Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron. How are you doing, Corey?
A lot better than you're doing, Nick. You're on the frozen tundra up north, and I'm in a beautiful, surrounded by palm trees, warm. I could just go on and on about how great of a time I'm having in Florida while you're freezing.
Mention, not even just the weather is great. The location that you're at is amazing. So Corey's living it up right now. I guess I can look forward to the Nets getting a nice blowout win last night. But let's talk some hoops today, New Year's resolutions. Then we got a special guest coming on later to talk Pelicans, Preston Ellis. So let's start with the officiating, though, in the NBA. Bad calls last night and then some bad calls on Thursday night. We'll start with Thursday night's game, Rockets, Celtics. Obviously still a great comeback by the Celtics, but two calls at the end of the game. James Harden called for offensive fouls on Marcus Smart, a known flopper in the league, on these two calls.
I mean, you said it just there. That's the starting talking point right there, is that he's a known flopper. There are certain players in the league that we know flop. You know, it's Marcus Smart, the person who he flopped on, James Harden, DeMarcus Cousins even. You know, there are certain guys in the league that flop. It's part of their game. It's the way they get to the line. It's the way they get offensive fouls, defensive fouls, whatever the case is. And the fact of the matter is, the referees missed two flops. I can understand one, but, I mean, if a guy is a notorious flopper, you just need to pay attention, especially when it's crunch time. You know, especially when the game is on the line, you can't let a flop have an impact on the final score. And unfortunately, Thursday, you know, it impacted the end of that game. No matter the case, though, the Rockets should never have blown a 26-point lead regardless. So, you know, you can be mad about the foul, but be more mad if you're a Rockets fan that your team blew the lead.
We're not making any excuses for the Rockets, but we would have liked to see, like you said, James Harden or the Rockets have a shot to win the game at the end. And my problem with the call is, yeah, I understand you can call that a foul. Calling that a foul for 48 minutes, do not call it for the last 2 minutes of the game, especially when it's considered, you know, something you're more likely to let go when it's late in the game. We see the push-offs from offensive players all the time, literally running off screens around the three-point line. You see that constantly. You see it on inbound passes constantly, and you're going to call that. There was a play earlier in that game where you probably could have called James Harden for an offensive foul on Shane Larkin, and it went the other way where Larkin got the defensive foul. In my eyes, that was more of an offensive foul by James Harden than what he did against Marcus Smart. So the inconsistency is definitely a problem. We will cut the refs some slack because they were only a two-man crew. You know, they have review. Do you think they should allow review to be used for things like fouls?
No, I don't. Only because it undermines the ref.
I have a question. Situation like this. So we're looking at a two-minute review. The ball goes out of bounds. It's clearly out of bounds on, let's say, Rockets and Celtics for this case. James Harden, he's driving to the rim, clearly fouled. No one touches the ball, but Harden is fouled, and he's hit on the back of the elbow. The ball goes out of bounds. Ball, but it was a clear foul, and now the Celtics are going to get the ball, and the Rockets are going to lose out.
I don't like it. I understand, like, you know, obviously in that situation, you know, it puts the Rockets in a really shitty situation. You know, they lose the ball. Obviously, he's fouled. They lose the ball, and the Celtics get the ball. And it changes the entire complexion of the game in that scenario. I don't like reviewing calls only because I can see it growing into so much more. Because if the minute you start undermining a ref by saying, you know, well, you know, review it, take it to the – you know, to Secaucus, New Jersey, and let them see it. I think if you start to do that in the final 2 minutes, you're going to want to do that more and more. And I don't know. I think it causes a kind of a more
hurts the ref's credibility.
Yeah.
What about the situation last night? We'll move on to another situation. Giannis Antetokounmpo, game-winning dunk, obviously steps out of bounds. The ref's right there. Obviously, it's still a hard call to make. People are like, oh, my God, he's right there. If I was reffing that situation, I probably would have been looking at the contact because there was a lot of contact on that play, so it's easy to see why his eyes were up. But do you think there should be a situation where the teams are able to challenge or they're able to look back and be like, oh, it's under 2 minutes, because it's a dead ball type of play? Do you think they should be able to review that or leave it how it is?
Yes. Now, this is a completely different scenario to me. This isn't a foul. This is no different to me than football. If you think a player steps on the line, especially if it's in the last 2 minutes of a game like that was, you know, you should be able to somehow say, you know, check that. Was his foot out? And if his foot was out of bounds, then you take away the point and you reverse the call and you say, you know, it's Celtics ball or Thunder ball. That's a different scenario to me. That's not a foul. You know, that's not reversing or going back on what you're saying. That's just seeing something that obviously, you know, changes the complexion of the game from Giannis not being called out of bounds.
Yeah. I think the fact that it's a dead ball call too makes a difference because it's not live or anything. You know, they're making the call, it's stopping the game. Something they should review because to argue anything else could have happened after the play. Either he's out of bounds and the ball's going to the Thunder, or he continues to play and he gets a dunk. There wasn't any type of rebound or anything. So I think that's where it kind of gets confusing.
I agree.
Let it play. Hypothetically, they let them play. Giannis misses that play. It's a layup and he misses. Then Thon Maker comes in with a putback. What do we do? Do we wave off the bucket or leave it or what? So I think it's definitely a confusing line.
I think you'd have to do like a challenge system, right? It would have to be, let's say, you know, Giannis goes for it. He steps on the line. He misses it, like you said. And, you know, the Thunder drive up the ball or something. Or Thon Maker, like you said, put a putback. There should be some kind of system where, regardless, the next timeout or the next deadage of ball, you review that. And as long as it's not more than maybe, you know, one possession away from that play, you reverse it. I do agree that it would be definitely something
the NBA is going to have to think about, look at. I think obviously with technology, they have a lot of avenues. The NBA is very smart in a lot of different ways. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some changes. I also wouldn't be surprised if they just left it how it is. Because obviously more things called, but at the end of the day, you know, as much as people hate the reviews, I think the reviews do help a lot. Like there's nothing worse than at the end of the game where the wrong team getting the ball.
No, I mean, there needs to be a happy medium. There needs to be, you know, a way to not have reviewing stuff overtake the game and a lot of stoppage that, you know, like the NFL, for example, their games are extremely drawn out because they review every scoring play to a degree. It slows up the game flow. In the NBA, it's already a lot of, you know, choppage because of free throws and everything else. You just can't go overboard on reviewing calls because then – you know, it's not going to be enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, and I think one way that helps make easy calls is having clear-cut rules. It's done a good job of establishing their rules, where so the NFL has had an issue establishing what a catch is, which is pretty sad, but that's for another day. But moving into, you know, talking new things, moving into 2018, 2017 is about to get to an end. We're going to talk New Year's resolutions for some teams and some players. Start us off with some guys or some players?
No, you start off first. Let me think.
I got one easy one. The Sixers turnovers. Last in the league in turnovers per game. Last in the league in turnover percentage. Talent and potential. Protect the ball. Enough yet to not be taking care of the ball. Obviously, they're a young team making mistakes, but you still need to clean that up if you want to get in the postseason.
Yeah, they've had a rocky stretch to start too. With, you know, just the fact that they. You know, Embiid obviously has been fantastic. Ben Simmons has been fantastic. Redick's been good. They started off really hot, and they've really been slipping these past couple weeks. They're just not as dominant. And like you said, you're seeing the youth in them. You know, they don't protect the basketball as much as they should. I think Ben Simmons has almost like 4.6 turnovers per game, which isn't great for a rookie, obviously.
Yep.
But yeah, that's definitely something they need to clean up going into the new year. And I'm sure Brett Brown. Is going to be pressing on that because that's a big part of the game.
I think you think about the fact that Embiid is constantly in and out of the lineup. It probably messes with chemistry a little bit. And just in terms of the style of play they're going to do, you know, when you have your best player playing and when you don't have him playing, it's going to be a big deal. And a lot of the time, I don't know if you've seen the reports and the articles, they don't know if Embiid's playing until literally like an hour before the game. So that's really tough on your teammates and on the coach.
Yeah, What did Andre Drummond say? Like, I'm not going to listen to anyone talk who doesn't play back-to-back nights, doesn't play every night. You know,
something along those lines.
Yeah, obviously Embiid needs to get his body right and for the Sixers to kind of let him off this leash. I doubt we'll see it this year. They're probably going to be extremely safe this entire year. But next year, I doubt that'll be an issue.
he's going to start to move into that groove. I'm going to move on to a player. One thing I would like to see from Russell Westbrook is to stop pulling up from three so much.
I got one. I got one now. After my thoughts on this. Westbrook has been fantastic this past week. I think he shot 40% from three, which is obviously very good for Westbrook. But like you said, that's kind of like the Thunder in general. I was talking to one of our contributors, Dickie Fung, on Twitter before, and he was saying how Carmelo just camps at the three-point line for the Thunder and doesn't do much. You know, he camps, and Westbrook drives the tempo and, like you said, chunks up a three-point shot off, you know, either contested or just a bad look and early in the shot clock.
I think sitting at the three-point line is an issue, not only for Melo, but a lot of players across the league. You got to move a little bit more. I think movement across the league would be something to see. I got a New Year's resolution for the Knicks. Much less in most three-point categories in terms of three-points attempted, percentage of points coming from three. In games and really compete in the NBA, you're still going to have to find a way to produce more threes, and I think that's something the Knicks need to worry about.
I got another use resolution for the Knicks. Decide who your point guard is. Either their point guard play has been atrocious. Well, not atrocious, but it's just not good. Between Jared Jack and Frank, they're both playing around 25 minutes. Jared Jack is shooting like 34% from the field, and Frank is shooting around 35% and like 25% from three. I would like to see the Knicks push towards the youth movement and let Frank play. You know, this kid has potential. We've seen him have potential. I want to see Frank out there for more than 25 minutes. Let him try and become the point guard of the future now.
I wouldn't mind seeing Frank getting a little bit more touches. He needs to be more aggressive, but I think minutes will help. I wonder if the Knicks are a little nervous about his size and playing him so many minutes being so young. That would be my only concern, but I think the Knicks need to do something at point guard. I talk a lot of Knicks fans on a regular basis, and just the guard play is not up to what you need it to be, especially in the NBA nowadays. They need to address either with Frank getting better, or maybe they make a small trade at the deadline. Resolution, the Grizzlies. You've had your little bit of success, but now it's time to start over. You're not going to beat any team in the West for the next few years. You might as well just start replenishing your talent.
I agree. I think that's a fair my same sentiments for the Grizzlies would be, you got to trade Gasol, get a draft pick, trade Conley, get a draft pick, or maybe hold on to Conley. Conley, to me, is kind of up in the air because he's still relatively young. But Gasol, get rid of him. And honestly, Tyreke Evans, you know, the career year he's having right now, he could help so many teams as a six man or even as a starting two guard. So I would like to see those two guys definitely moved.
Him a little bit on the NBA Outlet, the last one about trade percentages. So if you want to hear trades, go listen to that pod, NBA Outlet number 93. But I would move Evans too, similar to Nikola Mirotic. You know, move these guys while their value is high. These both have been guys who've been inconsistent in their careers. So if you're going to move them now. Anybody else for you, Corey?
Just to repeat that sentiment, you know, same thing with like Courtney Lee, a guy who we also mentioned on episode 93. Guys who are hot or cold, when they are hot, sell them. Get rid of them. I think Goran Dragic in Miami is another guy who, if he's hot, maybe trade him. I wouldn't be – and Massey Miami, news resolution for Miami. Blow it up. Pat Riley, I respect you. You're a fantastic operator of basketball operations. You need to – things need to change in Miami. This team is not right. There's too much money locked up in players who aren't that good. Now, Whiteside is probably the only piece to keep for the future. Dragic, try and get rid of him. Wayne Ellington can probably get some good value. He's been very solid at the three-point line. You know, I would just try and move some of those contracts off the books to try and build for a different future.
Yeah, I agree. I think you got to kind of move some of those guys and just hope that you're able to kind of get some picks. And you don't even have to go full rebuild. You can kind of replenish. Draymond Green. I think Draymond Green and probably the Warriors in general just need to calm down with the foul call complaints. Draymond staying up there in the tech game. I think he's already halfway to the total that gets you suspended. So him, Cousins, Nikola Jokic is racking up some techs this year, or he's been ejected twice or something like that. So guys need to calm down and respect the refs a little bit more. Obviously, their job is extremely tough, but
yeah, I mean, I had the same gripe a few weeks ago. As I mentioned, my dad's an umpire for baseball, so I have a soft spot for refs because I can understand how hard it is for them. You know, you have to make a call or a decision. I know you've reffed basketball too as well, on the side before. it's extremely hard to make the right call in fast motion. You know, we are privileged to see slow-mo replays, you know, five times after a call is made, which gives us, you know, that kind of 20/20 hindsight to say, oh, wow, you missed that. But, you know, when things are going fast speed, it is really hard to, you know, catch everything. And they get it right, you know, 94% of the time, which is still really good.
Exactly. I think people don't realize how much TV slows it down in general, the replays, the slow motion. I was just mentioning actually to my dad how going to the game kind of reminds you about how fast and quick these athletes are and appreciation after you leave a game, then instead of, you know, just constantly watching it on TV.
Oh, for sure. It's night and day. There's nothing like the atmosphere. You know, watching a game on TV, you don't even feel the atmosphere, you know, and when the bad call is made, fans definitely get a little hyped up.
All right, but that wraps it up for the New Year's resolution segment. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back talking Pelicans. All right, back from our small break here. We are ready to talk Pelicans. We have special guest Preston Ellis from the Bird Rights.
Hey, thanks for letting me join you guys. I didn't know if that was my spot to come in. Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you on.
Nice to have a little Pelican voice on here. It's a rare thing to find.
Yeah, well, you might not think it's so nice once you hear what I have to say. We're a very tickled and frustrated fan base at the time, as I'm sure most national media types will let you guys know about. But yeah, let's talk some Pels, y'all.
All right, let's get right into it. Going to the season, the expectations for the Pelicans were kind of all over the place. Some people said playoffs, some people said no playoffs. Obviously, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, two of the best bigs, if not the two best bigs in the NBA. And the expectations so far this season, have they been above or below? What have you thought of the Pelicans so far this season, Preston?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you know, follow the Ringer, most guys had us falling out of the playoffs, of course, with teams like the Clippers and Memphis Grizzlies usually taking up that space. But the local types like us, we had them right around the seventh or eighth spot with an upside of the fourth or fifth. Now, before you laugh at that, you know, just based on the potential we had seen from the Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins pairing, all of us had seen all 25 of their games together. We knew that the two of them were going to work. One thing that we couldn't account for going into the season was the level of effort. Anyway, I'm getting off topic. Basically, we're all a bit disappointed at this point in time because this is the worst case scenario. You don't want to be caught in no man's land. DeMarcus Cousins will be back with the Pelicans next year. They're going to sign him. They have no choice. He doesn't have a choice either. There's not a lot of teams out there with cap space right now. And a lot of teams are scared to offer 4 and 5 year max level contracts. Last offseason, we were even worried whether or not the Clippers were going to offer Blake Griffin 5 years, $176 million. Of course, they ended up doing it, and now he's been injured, as he does, but he's back now, and they're right back in the playoff hunt. They're just 3 games back. So we know that Boogie's going to be back, but is it enough? Is being a seventh seed enough? We've got Anthony Davis coming off the books potentially in 2 years, and people in New Orleans are scared. They're scared right now because being at the back half of that playoff picture is just not going to get us done. He had that big interview, I'm sure most of you saw, with Adrian Wojnarowski just a week ago, where he mentioned winning 22 times. Believe me, I went in and I counted. It's probably a 200-word essay, and he mentioned it 22 times. And that's not something the Pelicans have been doing this year. Of course, they're right over 500 at 18 and 17, but they've got, I was talking to some of the guys on Twitter today, they've got 6 mind-bending losses this year, including last night's stunner to the Dallas Mavericks, where the Dallas Mavericks, the third worst team in the NBA, scored 77 points in the first half. Anyway, I'm drowning on, but basically it's difficult to assess where we want the Pelicans to be in terms of what our prognosis was in the offseason. It's probably right on cue, right at that 7 or 8 range, but we're still disappointed with that being the end result. If anything, we would rather them be right out of the playoffs and blow the whole thing up and just start over and hopefully salvage Anthony Davis' last 2 years under contract.
That was beautiful. That was absolutely beautiful. Before the season started, me and Nick did a preview series, and we both thought the Pelicans were going to be right around that 7-8 seed like you talked about with high upside. Because I actually think, you know, with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, they have the perfect formula to beat a team like the Warriors because those two guys are unguardable. You can only limit them. You're not going to stop those two guys. They're going to get almost whatever they want on any night. It's all about, like you said, the surrounding cast hasn't been that good. And obviously the wins aren't adding up to wins. But you really don't think DeMarcus Cousins leaves? You think he stays?
There's no option. There's no option out there. Nobody's going to offer him 5 years, 176 million. And I'm going to tell you why. Of course, Boogie, you know, when you think of the people like Bill Simmons, who mentioned Boogie as an MVP candidate. And last night you look at his numbers, 32, 28. I can't remember how many steals, but only three turnovers. These are MVP type numbers. Nobody's put up these numbers in, I think it was 54 years, something, 1963. I'm terrible at math. What's 37? 44 years. So it's been a hot second. And he's had, I think, three of these 30 and 20 games already this season. But what you don't see are the mistakes, the mental errors. I'm going to give you two prime examples just from last night. Boogie has been really good the last two games at these errors, at the effort, at getting back on defense. But early on in the season, what we would see is him take the ball at the top of the key. He tried to dribble, penetrate past the defender. Sometimes it works and it goes on ESPN, but most of the time he bounces it off his foot, goes out of bounds, throws himself into the defender, doesn't get the call, and he kind of moans under the paint while everybody's up the floor and getting an easy fast break. And the Pelicans, I think, are worst in the league right now at allowing fast breaks for just moments like that. But what I was getting back to is you see the stat lines of players like Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins. And I want to be really clear on something because everybody wants to put all the blame on the surrounding cast. And on a night-to-night basis, that can be the culprit. But also you have to look at these two guys. DeMarcus Cousins spends a lot of time not getting back on transition D, although, like I said, he's been good the last couple of days. And last night against the Mavericks, the Pelicans were down by as many as, I can't remember exactly what it was, somewhere in the mid-20s. They had a chance late. They were down 120 to 117, and there was a switch between Harrison Barnes and J.J. Barea. Jrue Holiday slid over to guard Harrison Barnes to prevent the three-point shot. J.J. was in the corner where he was automatic all night. Those guys shot 60% from three-point range, and Anthony Davis fell asleep. He was caught in the middle of the floor. He didn't choose an offensive player to go and attack or to box out or anything. He just stood there. Harrison Barnes whips it over to J.J. Barea. It's a three-point shot. And this is the type of thing that these guys have been complaining about all season. We've heard it from Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, Rajon Rondo, Alvin Gentry. It's effort. Davis said last night, we didn't have any energy. We let them get comfortable. They didn't feel the defense. Anyway, I'm making this a long, I'm drowning on again. We're very frustrated just because of this loss. But basically, like, these are the kind of mental errors that general managers and scouts see. But, you know, just an everyday fan who watches like a couple of games here and there doesn't see. They don't pick out times when DeMarcus Cousins doesn't run back, when he gets seven technical fouls. They don't see those numbers. All they see are the handsome box scores. But long story short, DeMarcus will be back. There's no one out there willing to pay him that money, and the Pelicans have absolutely no choice.
Fair enough. That was a great way to answer that question.
Preston's over here giving us some great Pelicans insight. All right, obviously with the national media, a lot of NBA Twitter, there's been plenty of talk about DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, like you mentioned, a better player of the two. You know, obviously, like you said, Cousins has been putting up the stat lines, but Davis, you know, has had some issues with effort. Who would you say has been the better player of the season? I know who I think is, but what are your thoughts, Preston? Obviously, you watch the Pelicans way more.
I don't want to kill them on effort because something you also like, you just can't tell is the minutes that these guys play. Last night, I think AD was at 42, DeMarcus was at 44. And while AD is only averaging 36 on the year, which is still a very high number, he's had to leave, I think, three games in the first half, including two in the first quarter. So those numbers add up. These guys play a lot of minutes. So I'm sure it's hard to be active every minute that you're on the floor, especially, you know, last night, for example. But of the two players, Anthony Davis is clear, far and away, the better athlete, the better player on a night-to-night basis. I think the Ringer had DeMarcus as seven and Anthony Davis as eight, which blows my mind. But we did talk about this this offseason on the Bird Rights podcast. Our editor, Ali Cosell, said that DeMarcus is going to get the numbers. Anthony Davis isn't going to get the recognition he deserves. But when you watch this guy, 57% from the floor, excuse me, 39% from three. I don't have the rest of the numbers in front of me. Here it is. 10 rebounds per game, 2.5 assists, 2 steals, and this is all on 16 shots. Nobody has taken a bigger step backwards with the development of Jrue Holiday, the usage percentage of DeMarcus Cousins and Rajon Rondo. Boogie leads the NBA in usage right now. He gets the ball more than anybody else. I'm doing that off the top of my memory, but it's definitely top three. This guy always has the ball. He's always at the top of the key, dictating what the Pelicans offense is going to be doing. Anthony Davis doesn't get that opportunity. Anthony Davis is off ball a lot. And there's a lot of games in the fourth quarter where we see Anthony Davis matched up on Dirk, on Harrison Barnes, where we're screaming, give the ball to AD. There's no better matchup on the floor in this game right now than Anthony Davis against whoever is paired against him. But, you know, you got to make sure that we've got two top 10 three-point shooters right now in Darius Miller and Etuan Moore. We've got DeMarcus Cousins, who needs his 20 shots. We've got Jrue Holiday, that they want to get his 20 shots. They want to get him rolling. With Rajon Rondo in the lineup, he's, I don't know, doing like a remarkable 24-5-5 on like 50 and 40% respectively. Before they were giving them the ball and before Rajon Rondo was in there, he was dreadful, like 40% and 20% from three respectively, and something like 14 points a game. So it's very important that this become like team basketball. It's a Chris Finch system. Nobody's taken a bigger step back than Anthony Davis. And yet still, every time he touches the ball, good things happen. And he leads the team in plus minus at 4.5. I don't know how much you guys put stock into that statistic. I know a lot of people are mixed on it. But Anthony Davis is not only the best player for the Pelicans. Anthony Davis has the potential and the talent to be the best player in the NBA. And I'm sure everybody knows this. You see it on the Ringer every day. He's not necessarily getting put into the position to be able to execute that, to be able to lead this team the way that he needs to. He's not a LeBron James who can, you know, take the ball up the court and, like, I don't know, he's not an assist magician the way that DeMarcus or LeBron is. But what he does do, he does better than anybody else.
Yeah, I agree with you that Anthony Davis is the better player of the two. I think you made a great point about how you know, the media sees the box scores, and, you know, DeMarcus Cousins obviously 32 and 20 just last night. But me and Nick the other night watched the Nets Pelicans game, where the Pelicans.
You have to remind me.
I'm sorry. You know, it's the last Pelicans game I saw, so it's fresh in my mind. But obviously, Preston, I'm sure you know that game. They led pretty much the entire game. They were up by 30 at one point. They won by like 17. But, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, as I recall, he, like you said, he keeps the ball in his hands a lot. And Anthony Davis was a catch and shoot three-pointer in the first half. Like, he was a three-point shooter. And he had a huge mismatch because the Nets have no bigs. And they definitely didn't use Anthony Davis to his full potential. I didn't know he only takes 16 shots per game. It's absurd to me to think that he's third on the totem pole behind DeMarcus Cousins and Jrue Holiday.
Yeah, it's like you said, he's basically become a more efficient version of Klay Thompson at this point, a taller, better version of Klay Thompson. It is what it is at this point. They're all making it work, and they're all trying to figure it out. It's very similar to the situations going on in Minnesota and Oklahoma City. They're trying to find that delicate balance that makes everybody happy and puts wins on the board. And at the end of the day, it is working offensively. I think we're second in the NBA or third in the NBA right now at 111.5, something like that. But defensively, last season we were ninth, and we plummeted all the way to 29th. So it's not like the offensive end of the floor is the problem. Whether it's Boogie, whether it's Drew, whether it's AD, Darius Miller, Etuan Moore, they're going to score points. And that's something that's dramatically different from last year when they were 25th in offense. But this year, the problem's been defense. It's been offensive rebound. It's been rebounding in general. We lost the rebounding battle to Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks by 12 last night. Like, we have the two biggest, most athletic rebounders in the NBA. At one point last night, DeMarcus Cousins had 18 rebounds, and the next leading rebounder for the Pelicans had two. So it's very interesting what's unfolding on the floor, how the team has dramatically changed between last year and this year with many of the same players. Of course, you've got Rajon Rondo taking up a bulk of the minutes now, and you're missing Solomon Hill. But with that being said, the team is just so dramatically different, and there are so many puzzling statistics to point at, like rebounding, like fast breaks, like live ball turnovers, stuff that really has been holding this team back at this point in the season.
Yeah, I have a question, Preston. Do you think they really miss Solomon Hill?
They do and they don't. Offensively, they certainly don't. And it's kind of interesting where players like Solomon Hill fit into the NBA, like Andre Roberson. Of course, there was one game last year against the Rockets where he exploded to the surprise of everyone, including himself. He scored 36 points. But Solomon Hill is a defender who does nothing for you offensively. He's not a great rebounder, but he is a shutdown defender. He can really minimize players like DeMar DeRozan, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. Last year, the Pelicans almost upset the Spurs. They were fighting for a playoff spot, and he kept Kawhi Leonard to something like 16 points, but Kawhi is such a great player. He gets his own buckets. He gets a steal, and he led two fast breaks in a row, picking Drew Holiday's pocket, which was really upsetting for Pelicans fans, including myself. But he is that defender that brings your defense from 29th in the NBA to potentially top 10. He has that level of potential. The problem is what he takes away from you offensively. Right now they have Etuan Moore filling that void, and Etuan Moore has been insane the past 6 weeks. He's shooting, I think, something like, 56% from three-point range in the month of December. So he's just been out of his mind, unconscious, and you lose a lot of that with Solomon Hill. So the Pelicans aren't necessarily better with Solomon Hill in the lineup over Etuan Moore. They're just different. But what Solomon Hill would add is depth. Because right now, they don't have a lot of depth. The guys they do have in their eight-man rotation are great, but they don't have a backup four. They don't have a backup five. They tried to give those minutes to Omar Asik and Cheick Diallo against the Nets game, if you were able to watch that. And they went on an immediate 17-0 run and had to insert AD and DeMarcus Cousins right back into the lineup. With that being said, it wasn't the most sound lineup to go to. They didn't have Dante Cunningham in there at the four, which they should have done, putting Omar and Cheick both in at the same time was a mistake. But with that being said, like, having Solomon Hill be able to play some minutes at the four potentially would be really big for the squad. But I don't know if you can start him over Etuan Moore right now, but definitely a piece of the rotation.
So are you okay with them paying them $50 million a year or $50 million over 4 years, whatever his big contract is? Or is that a guy you think they try and trade when he gets healthy to keep Cousins?
It's 4 and 48 for Solomon Hill, and I don't know. It's one of those things where with DeMarcus Cousins now, we were able to secure players like Ian Clark and Jameer Nelson. But before we had Boogie, it's hard to get people to want to come to the New Orleans, man. It's tough. They haven't been a winner since 2015. Well, when they got the eighth seed and they got swept by the Warriors. Before that, it was all the way back to 2010. And everybody's talking about Anthony Davis going to Boston, including Anthony Davis himself going to Alvin Gentry's office and Del Dent's office and saying, what are all these trade rumors, man? And of course, they quiet in him. Everybody wants him in New Orleans. He wants to be in New Orleans. But with that being said, like, last offseason, we desperately needed a wing, and they overpaid to get one. And that's just been kind of the culture in New Orleans right now, is giving Omar Asik 5 years, $58 million, when nobody in their right mind would have paid him that, although we saw Joaquin Noah and Timothy Mozgov. It's difficult to explain these contracts that are handed out to Mason Plumlee and these guys. But the Pelicans have run into that trouble, and now they're kind of hamstrung by it. And even should they get a 7 seed and re-side DeMarcus Cousins, they don't have any salary cap flexibility. They're going to have to offload these guys, and that's going to take multiple first-round picks. But at the time, overpaying a bit to get Solomon Hill, we had to do it.
Like you said, it was hard to get guys in New Orleans, so they had to kind of overpay in some situations. Now they're kind of paying for it. But talking about this year, in the best possible scenario, who would you want the Pelicans to match up in the first round with? You know, just realistically, obviously they can't match up with one of the eighth or seventh seeds. Let's just say they stay in the bottom four of the Western Conference playoffs. Who would be your ideal first round matchup?
It's got to be the Timberwolves, even though, from an aesthetic, I would say the Warriors, because the Pelicans always play up to the Dubs. They always end up losing by six or eight, but the most previous matchup, they were up by over 20 at the end of the first half. They always play really well. They come out hungry and they don't let up. Of course, the Warriors are so good. They still outpace them. But it's difficult to watch the Pelicans play the Timberwolves, because every time you do, you sit there and you stare at the screen and you think to yourself, the Pelicans are better than this team. They are far superior. We held Karl Anthony Towns to 2 points their first matchup of the year. I want to say it was the first week in November. And the most recent one, they fumbled away late. I can't remember the score offhand, but you watch these two play. You've got the Jeff Teague injury. I think Tyus Jones had something recently that's going to keep him out for a bit. Jimmy Butler hasn't really put it together, although he's been playing much better as of late. And you've got a bunch of these guys, you know, saying bad things about Tom Thibodeau to the media. There's obviously like a source of conflict there with Taj Gibson playing too many minutes, not going deep enough into the rotation. Andrew Wiggins has been struggling. And you definitely don't want to face off with the Rockets, because that's just terrifying. And the Spurs, as well as the Pelicans, match up with them without Kawhi Leonard. They beat him by something like 18 earlier in this year. It's just too scary to face Kawhi Leonard. It's too scary to face James Harden, even though they've lost five in a row with Chris Paul. We definitely don't want Chris Paul coming back to town and beating us. So I would definitely say the Warriors, just from a fun aesthetic, and I think these guys would really bring out their best basketball. But the most realistic possibility, I'm sure everyone is pointing to, is trying to get that five seed and trying to get the Timberwolves.
I don't know. You make a good point, because I never really thought about how they matched up with the Timberwolves. But, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns also is just a terrible defender. So that just gives another plus, you know, to the Pelicans, because Cousins or Davis will just cook him in the paint. And then Taj Gibson, like you said, he gets probably way too many minutes. He's very slow. And there's just not enough depth. I actually think that would be a nice upset for the Pelicans to advance. And like you said, too, I have always loved how the Pelicans match up against the Warriors. Obviously, you're not going to really, you know, guard or stop Kevin Durant or even Curry, but there's just no one who could stop Davis. I mean, is Zaza Pachulia really going to limit DeMarcus Cousins? Is JaVale McGee going to limit Anthony Davis? Like, no, those two guys are. I mean, they might as well just hold their head in their hands because they have no chance.
And the Pelicans actually do a really good job of limiting Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. Jrue Holiday on Klay Thompson is a great matchup. And, of course, Klay is still going to get his points because he works off screens. And the Warriors are better than anybody at those screens in creating separation. But it's still really fun to watch the way that these two teams match up. And like you said, Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins can't be stopped. Draymond Green and Zaza Pachulia, they can't do it. Those guys really own the paint against them. They got a lot of easy buckets. And then it's just up to Steph Curry and Kevin Durant to outshoot them. And they always do. But, man, it's entertaining as hell to watch.
And, I mean, one thing that the Pelicans have this year, obviously Rajon Rondo isn't the same player he once was. But we saw last year in the playoffs, he turned up his game to another level, especially defensively when it comes to film study. He's in there breaking up plays as much as possible. And like you mentioned, Jrue Holiday, I think, is an underrated defender. So that'd be a fun matchup to watch. But like you said, I think going at the young Timberwolves without that experience, I think the Pelicans could probably get an upset there. And I don't really mind them against San Antonio. A lot depends on Kawhi's health. He'll be 100% by then, but who knows? If he's not 100%, I wouldn't really be as scared of that matchup, especially with a Pau Gasol and a LaMarcus Aldridge. I think Cousins and Davis should be able to kind of manhandle them a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And LaMarcus Aldridge, the past couple of off seasons in the playoffs, hasn't really shown out. Although in Kawhi's absence this year, he's had sort of a renaissance. But like you said, yeah. Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins can definitely take advantage of that lineup. I guess I'm just recalling their last matchup last year when Kawhi Leonard can single-handedly just take over a game. He's kind of like a, I don't know, playing possum, I guess is the terminology, is that the two teams seem neck and neck for four quarters, and then all of a sudden Kawhi Leonard comes to life, and he seemingly like just exhibits himself as the best player in the matchup, which is really hard to envision in a game that features DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. But Kawhi Leonard just has the talent and the capability to create easy shots and fast breaks for himself on both ends of the floor. It's almost kind of like a free safety like Deion Sanders, who every time he touches the ball, he's just going coast to coast. So it is really scary watching him play, more so than a lot of other players, because he is such a threat on both sides of the floor.
And now he knows karate.
Yeah, so it's rare you see it's rare you see a player that's so good at both ends of the floor like that. But before we get out of here, one last question for you, Preston. Give us a percent on the chances that the Pelicans win a first round series this year.
Oh, man. Why are you going to put me in the spot? I'm going to sound so negative, and my editor is going to kill me after this. Oh, my God. I'd say 6, because with Rajon Rondo in the lineup, this team can outscore anybody. The problem is the defense. Last night, giving up 128 to the Mavericks, and that's been commonplace. I think it's something like 2 times in the last 20 games we've held an opponent under 100 points, and there was a 5-game in 15-day period where we were up on teams by 10 points or more and lost all 5 of those games.
Wow.
So it's really difficult to say we're going to improve, because at 34 games into the season, or I think we're 35 by now, you pretty much are who you are. There aren't a whole lot of teams who take a massive step forward midway through the season, except for Damian Lillard, who always gets left out of the All-Star voting and then sets himself on fire in the second half of the season. But pretty much we are who we are, and I don't know, I'll say 10%, because I don't think we get up to the 5th seed. I think it's somewhere 6th through 8th, and then you're drawing one of the Rockets, the Spurs, and the Warriors, and unless there's some kind of injury to somebody, I don't know, I just don't see it.
Preston, don't get too upset about the loss to the Mavericks. You know, they're on a 3-game winning streak, so they're just a little bit hot right now. They beat the Raptors, too, a couple days ago. My Pacers, they're just on a little bit of a heat streak.
I get what you're saying, and I don't want to drown on because I know you guys are trying to get out of here, but there have been 6 really upsetting losses this year, and it always goes back to the same thing. After the game, these guys say, sorry, we didn't have energy tonight. We came out flat, and this team just beat us, and we let them. And it started with the Orlando Magic game the first week of November, and it's happened 6 times this season where these guys just – they don't come out with energy, and they confess it. They confess we didn't play hard. And in a team that has, like, such a razor-thin margin of error, to put it in Justin Verrier's words, the Pelicans have no room for error. They have to win. They have to get up to the 5 seed, like we said, to have a chance at all of advancing in the playoffs. And even then, you're just getting to the second round, potentially. They can't give up these games, not just against the Mavericks, but against the Magic, against the Sacramento Kings at home, against the Nuggets, where they're leading by as many as 20, and they let them climb back in the fourth quarter, and then they lose in overtime. They can't let these games slip out of their fingers. It's too tight in the West. It's too tough. Oklahoma City's going to come to life. We've seen them recently come to life. And the Clippers are getting Blake Griffin back. Rudy Gobert's back, or going to be back soon. I haven't watched a Jazz game in a while. You can just confess my knowledge of that. But these teams are coming for the Pelicans. There's no time to take your foot off the pedal. You can't lose these type of games. And we have the Knicks tonight, and we have to win.
As a fan, you know, the most frustrating thing is lack of effort. You know, if guys miss shots or off from three that night, you can't get upset. But if they're not putting in the effort and the energy, that's something you get frustrated about. But Preston, first time, probably the best Pelicans insight we've ever had on the podcast. So thank you for that. Thank you, Corey, for hopping on. And thank you, listeners, for listening in.
Thank you, guys.
And as always, you can listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and otgbasketball.com.